Right, well, okay, friends, hopefully this one will be technically a little easier than number 94. This is Esoteric Astrology 95, and we are at the conclusion of the Leo chapter, and we have looked at five phases of development, which, as I've often said, cannot be exactly correlated five or six phases of development, which cannot be exactly correlated with three decanates moving clockwise and three decanates moving counterclockwise. I think a lot more work has to be done to establish that people who are strongly influenced by the soul cannot be born in the first or the third decanate, or that people who are influenced by the monad will only be born in the third decanate. I think that is an assumption which goes too far and has to be tested out. All right. We have gone through the first five phases, which are physical, emotional, mental, personal, and then aspirational, personal, and disciplic or soul phase. We are now at the initiatic phase of Leo, and we are looking here at the rulership by the sun veiling Uranus. The sun is still very much what it is, but it's at that phase or stage of influence which tends to bring out the Uranian powers of true spiritual authenticity in the Leo type. Uranus is a planet much impressing and not given so much to being impressed. It conditions rather than is conditioned. It discloses the archetype rather than being subjected to outer circumstances. It is representing an interior pattern which indwells in purpose. So the initiate here under the sun as it veils Uranus, remember, in describing the general six phases, we are not dealing with the decanate rulers per se. What we're doing is to establish a stage of evolution, and then we see how the various decanates and their rulers would work out in relation to that particular phase. This is the highest of all phases, the initiatic phase, when the individual is either beginning to be influenced by the monad or is influenced by the monad. The initiate is fully identified with being a soul and learning what it means to identify as spirit monad, the one self, the relinquished point. Well, I think what's relinquished there is the point as a definite and exclusive center. The initiate finds himself in every possible point. In a way, having no points is the same as having a superabundance of points, a point everywhere. So the initiate finds himself in every point of life, which, after all the many points are only one point, in fact. So it's not an exclusively owned point, which is the center of the initiate, but in fact he's able to transfer his sense of being into every unit of life and find that he is or has taken over every unit of life. There is but one being and all points represent it, and he finds himself equally at home within all points of life. Now, we had here the idea of Mars, the Sun, and Jupiter as the three rulers given by DK of the Leo decanates. And we discussed Sefariel with his Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, and Alan Leo with his Sun, Jupiter Mars, saying there may be, after all, some applicability of those lesser assignments. But we trust to the Tibetans' far deeper spiritual insight, and so we go with that initial conflict and the full of Mars, the full self-knowledge of the Sun, and the blessing, abundance, and beneficence of Jupiter. Let's see here. Yes, as he says, self-rule, that's the Sun, positive to all possible circumstance, and therefore to all planets, as planets have more to do with circumstance than the luminaries do. Self-rule through initial conflict, because it is the victory within the conflict which gives this self-rule. There is a battle between the two suns, or a battle between the soul and the personality, or a battle between circumstantial effect and positivity to that effect. So self-rule through initial conflict carried to a successful issue. Now, that is so Jupiterian, a successful issue, and blessed by the beneficence of Jupiter. So success awaits the Leo person in the 20 to 30 decanate, and it will be the success of being positive to all circumstance, and under Uranus, and in a sense under Jupiter, able to beneficently reorganize the entire environment according to the archetype that the Leo individual has to express. So, carried to a successful issue and blessed by the beneficence of Jupiter is the true history. Notice how DK there is saying, well, the other astrologers here have offered a kind of history. Indeed, they have, but it's not the true history of the advanced Leo aspirant. The advanced Leo aspirant is moving from Mars to the Sun to Jupiter, and not in reverse manner from Jupiter to the Sun to Mars, although that has an important descriptive power in the life of human beings that are less fully developed. And this thought and the objective result of this realization is summed up for us in the mottos, which we will review in just a moment. Anyway, under Mars here, there's a great soul expansiveness reached, and the spirit asserts itself. Notice, Mars is always assertion. Personality assertion, soul assertion, and even, in a sense, spirit assertion. We cannot say that simply because it is a non-sacred planet. It has nothing to do with the spirit of man, because after all, these planets are the homes of great deities who are in their development far, far beyond the human spirit, and therefore can influence the human spirit. Great soul expansiveness is reached, and the spirit asserts itself. Man asserts the fact, that's a kind of a first-rate factor related to the monad, of his nature as a monad soul. Man asserts the fact of his nature as a monad soul. Spirit is forcing its way into the soul-infused personality. The divine will forces its way through, and the soul-infused personality must obey. So this is a kind of domination, a Martian domination coming from above. It's Uranus and Mars together, because Uranus is the ongoing ruler with the Mars decanate from 0 to 10. And there are breakthroughs that occur here. If you're looking for breakthroughs, that which goes beyond boundaries, look very much for the combination of Uranus and Mars. Now, when we get into the Sun decanate for the man who is responsive to spirit, the man stands in the wider life of growing monadic awareness. The personality is a kind of sun, the soul nature on the higher mental plane, and even the higher egoic nature on the triadal levels, they are a kind of sun, and the monad is a kind of sun. It is a solar plane, in a way, this monadic plane. And the greatest power and luminosity, or solarity, you might say, comes from the monad, at least for man, the monad which finds its home within the sun. So his identity has expanded far beyond the range of personality, even far beyond the range of soul. His consciousness includes awareness of a third sun, which we say even beyond the range of soul. Soul is a generic term, we remember, but as we usually use it, it expresses the kind of limitation which is experienced within the causal body. And while it seems a very great expansion of consciousness over what we normally experience in our personality nature, it is nonetheless a kind of a limitation upon that vast range of holistic awareness which is possible to the monad, which is the one, experiences itself as the one, realizes the one, and sees only the one beneath all the diversity which it also, of course, registers. So the consciousness now includes the awareness of a third sun, and there is the sense of participating in the being of this third sun. Yeah. Okay. Then finally, under Jupiter, this is the climax. The man is not only a soul, but a will and spirit, serving the plan with full beneficence, the Jupiterian word, with the largesse of spiritual triad and monad. Master Jupiter is suggested here. Remember, Jupiter and Uranus together indicate the possibility of becoming a master. Obviously not in all horoscopes, but in those horoscopes of individuals for whom it is possible. So the man is not only a soul, but a will and spirit. In other words, let's just put it like this. Jupiter rules the monadic plane. And we're dealing here with a man who is registering the monad and registering Jupiter at the same time. So the expansive, put it like that, monadic self is revealed, and the consciousness participates in that expansiveness. We call this monadic awareness. It's a type of soul, as soul is consciousness. It is, in a way, monadic soul. All right, well, these give some seed ideas, I think. But really, let's see. Yes, some seed ideas for us. And we can, you know, expand upon these as we need to. All right, so you've had the six phases for Leo. Reviewing, we have the Hydra, the crater, the cup or chalice, representing the causal body, Corvus, the crow, the messages from spirit. We have Mars, Sun, and Jupiter as the DK rulers. We can reverse that on the wheel of form, Jupiter, Sun, Mars, if we choose to. We have Sephiriel, Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, 0 to 10, 10 to 20, and 20 to 30. And then we have Alan Leo's Sun, Jupiter, Mars, 0 to 10, 10 to 20, and 20 to 30. Much deep research has to be undertaken here to see the degree to which the different rulers actually have influence, the degree of influence that they do have. So now, going back to the text, we have a summation in the two mottos. DK calls them mottos. I think that's a good term. Mottos of the sign, in the earlier days, and the word said, the supervisory word of the soul who is watching form evolve and evolves through many phases that are not soul expressive. The word says, let other forms exist. I rule because I am. The word as well can be considered a kind of personality word, or the word of lower form, or how lower form experiences this sign in the earlier days of evolution. To be is to entitle oneself to rulership, regardless of the quality of that being. The early Leo individual has such a dominating sense of selfhood that the fact that he exists is enough in his eyes to make him the ruler. His status cannot be challenged, and he does not compare himself to others hierarchically, and does not understand states above his own. His own state is de facto the ruling state. So he is the king over all others and not yet the king of himself. Then it goes through the I am that stage, and the I am that I am stage, and gradually self-rule, rulership is established, and one becomes the king of himself. So I am, says the Tibetan, is the word of the self-conscious, selfish, individual Leo. Yes, and I am that is the word of the Leo subject. Interestingly, he is submitting himself or subjecting himself to the power of the soul, to the higher spiritual power. So he is now a true subject. In order to become a king, one must first be spiritually a subject. At least in order to become a spiritual king, one must first be a spiritual subject. So I am that is the word of the Leo subject, who is rapidly gaining the higher consciousness, the soul consciousness, and preparing for fresh and universal expression, not only in Aquarius, as it says here, but in the higher levels of Leo. Aquarius is the sign of universality. We have discussed what is universality. It is essentially solar systemic consciousness, because that, for all practical purposes, is our universe. The solar system is our universe. We're not speaking of supergalactic consciousness, or the consciousness of all possible galaxies within the vastness of universal space. We're not speaking of that at all. When the word universal is used, we have to work our way into that greater type of perception throughout the duration of this particular universe. And then finally, I am that I am. The man realizes himself as the one and only spirit, the one and only being. I am that I am. I am nothing else but what I am, and that is the only thing that is. I am pure being. Well, this is such an important sign, so important to humanity, because it is essentially humanity's sign and represents the individualization of the human being and essentially the formation of the human kingdom, especially through the intercession of the solar angels, which have about them, being hearts of fiery love, much of the influence of Leo. In addition to the Capricorn influence. In a way, I don't see why every solar angel should not be a zodiac in itself, capable of a high response to all the 12 signs of the zodiac. I think of them in that way. The greater beings, and these solar angels were human beings in a previous Mahamanvantara, have achieved the capacity to respond to all 12 signs of the zodiac. So they are capable of offering the human being any type of sign or planetary combination that he needs, or at least timing the birth of the human being once the higher stages of evolution are reached, so that particular influences play upon the human being and can eventually develop in that human being the power to be universally responsive to the zodiac and the planets, just the way the solar angel is. Well, okay, friends. We're 20 minutes into this program. I never feel quite satisfied, you know. Obviously, I'm speaking somewhat spontaneously here, and I suppose with ponderous thought, I would be able to come up with precisely what needs to be said, at least as far as my own limitations reveal it. But I have chosen the method of commentary, and therefore am moving forward to a discussion of Cancer the Crab. We are, as you know, moving in a clockwise manner through the zodiac, and DK is doing this, I think, for, you know, heuristic purposes, revealing a new method of considering the zodiac. What does it really mean to move clockwise, or apparently in the reverse order of the signs? It means that there will be a different type of response to the zodiacal energies than you find with the more advanced man. A lower type of response, conditioned very much by matter. And probably the different modes of motion around the wheel are great symbols of energy flows within the human being, energy flows which are differentiated according to whether a man stands in the earlier phases of evolution, when the subdiaphragmatic centers receive the greater portion of energy, or whether a man stands upon a later portion of the path with the energy flows particularly animating the higher centers rather than the lower. But let us look at Cancer the Crab, and we will be with this for several programs, I suspect. It's a long chapter, and it has seems to summarize a great deal. It looks at the different modes of light, and it looks at transitions between the pairs of opposites. It's a very rich chapter. Okay. So, this sign is not an easy one for the average student to understand. Well, the average astrologer thinks he understands it. But, of course, it's usually discussed in terms of personality, in terms of human feeling, and so forth. This sign is not an easy one for the average student to understand, for it is the polar opposite, psychologically speaking, of the state of group consciousness towards which humanity at this time is tending. I think if we turn to, again, page 332, we will see that quite. I wonder if I could make this any bigger. Something, I'm not sure whether I can. The zoom, you know, it's at 175. What if I make it at 200? Will it increase the size? Yes, a bit. It has increased the size. So the Cancer subject is subjected to mass limitations, and the blind, the unillumined, instinctually driven unit is lost to larger understanding and does not understand the context in which he is immersed. That is indeed contrary to the group consciousness, which, well, begins in earnest, I would say, in Capricorn, because initiation is in a way a group phenomenon. We are becoming soul conscious through initiation, and the soul is always group conscious. So it is the polar opposite, this sense of isolation, psychologically speaking, in terms of isolation. We have in Cancer the opposite condition, the opposite experience of the stage of group. We have isolation. So we have, have the sense of isolation here and encapsulation. And it shares with Leo some of this isolation, but Leo is the more splendid personal self, and Cancer is always protecting its boundaries from intrusion by the environment or intrusion by other cells. So it seeks to make itself impregnable, even though in a sense it is the one of the signs of motherhood. Hopefully we will not be the casual students that DK is discussing here. It is difficult for the casual student to distinguish accurately between mass consciousness and group consciousness. Well, you know, one is dependent upon soul perception, and the other is characteristic of the individual who perceives through the limitations of mind, emotions, and body alone. It's more an instinctual, isolated consciousness. Everyone has it, and the man is not really an individual. He is the product of mass tendencies shared by many who are not fully integrated individuals. There is a certain sameness in the response of all of these mass conscious individuals, and this is not the case for those who are group conscious. They are not regimented in the same way. They are cooperative, they are harmonized, they're unified, but they are individual and they have their own distinctive individual contribution to the group. And this is not the case with those who are mass conscious. Their contribution, their causal contribution is minimal, and they are all conditioned rather than conditioning. So we could say in mass consciousness, there is conditioning. These units are conditioned and not conditioning. And we know, however, that the true soul-infused individual is positive to his circumstances, as we've been studying in the sign Leo, and is a conditioning factor with respect to those circumstances and also with respect to lesser-developed human beings. Human beings stand today at a midway point. Is this midway in the development of humanity? Maybe. Generally speaking, between these two states of mind, though perhaps it might be more correct to say that a fairly large minority are becoming group conscious, whilst the majority are emerging out of mass conscious stage and becoming self-conscious individuals. And, if, you know, we owe a great deal to education in the producing of individuals. So I think DK is saying we have passed largely the somewhat Atlantean stage of mass consciousness, even when mind can be used to a degree. We are not yet, as a race, emergent into a cooperative, unified, group consciousness, where every individual subordinates his many gifts to the welfare of the group. We're not there. We're at a midway point. We're at a kind of Leo point, in a way, when many personalities are emerging on the stage of human expression. They have their own distinctive way, and you sometimes see people emphasizing this in the way they talk and the way they dress. They seek to be different and distinctive at any cost, and unknown to them is that, as DK calls it, that sanctified normality of the initiate who is subject to and adhering to universal principles, who realizes himself to be part of a whole. He's not so intent on defining himself in some distinctive way. This distinctive self-definition is a possible outcome when Uranus and Leo are working together before the ultimate phase of Uranus in Leo, this defining one's distinctive Uranian selfhood in lesser terms. Okay, well, anyway, we're somewhat at the in the middle phase, and DK is telling us this accounts for much of the present world difficulty and for the clash of idealisms. It's as if each idealistic system is an ego in the lower sense. So we have individual egos, we have national egos, maybe continental egos, you know, the clash of national entities under their sense of uniqueness. I think, interesting, Germany had this. It was important cities in Germany ruled by Leo in the personality sense, and Hitler strongly ruled by Leo. Italy had this, speaking of the fascist powers, and they Italy has the Leonian soul. Japan does not have this energy of Leo, but and it was more connected with Maya, but interestingly, its flag symbolized the rising sun. So always the national ego is antagonistically represented in these countries that cannot see their own place within the whole, but see only the possibility of dominance. Let other forms exist. I rule because I am Deutschland über alles, you know, Germany above all others. And of course, Imperial Rome was being refounded by the fascists in Italy, and the samurai creed, devoid of much honor, was being refounded in the Japanese system. All those systems went down to defeat at the end of World War II. So anyway, much world difficulty is existing here because of the clash of idealisms. Two groups bring a different approach to world problems. The two groups bring a different approach to, as we now find them, of course. One is a selfish approach emphasizing the part, and the other emphasizes the whole and seeks to work cooperatively for the welfare of the whole. We really don't have many nations doing that now, not the larger nations, but we have some of the mediating countries who are not a military threat to other countries in any sense of the word. They are thinking more in terms of the whole. I think very much of the Scandinavian countries and some other countries that have been successful mediators, because they don't have, they aren't driven by the kind of self-interest that the larger national egos are still subject to. So the two groups approach very differently. We have therefore three signs which from the angle of consciousness are closely related, yet widely separate and different in effect. Well, but from the angle of the progressing consciousness, let's see what DK is going to say. Well, indeed, here they are. Cancer, mass consciousness, instinctual awareness, shared by all at that phase of consciousness. So, in other words, the awareness of the elementals in the personality system. Elementals. This is a driven consciousness, an instinctually driven consciousness. Leo, self-consciousness, intelligent awareness. Now, the Cancer does not have, well, it has the third ray, but it's more activity in matter. Here, the luminosity of the fifth ray in Leo is expressed. Self-consciousness, intelligent awareness, coming to an understanding of oneself in relation to the environment, defining oneself through the environment as well. Through an understanding of the environment. What is the environment? What am I? Aquarius, group consciousness and intuitional awareness. Here we have Alice Bailey's book, From Intellect to Intuition, and we could have called it From Instinct to Intellect to Intuition, although there are not so many people today who would be reading the book she wrote, who are characterized by strictly by instinctual awareness. There's this mass effect, something that everyone has in common, something non-distinctive, which all subjected to mass consciousness have in common. So we move from instinct, which is blind, though targeted according to certain patterns of the larger entities who condition those who react instinctively. We have an instinctive driven consciousness, we have the intelligent self-aware consciousness, and we have the intuitional awareness, which is open to the larger ideas and larger perceptions. Now, this doesn't mean that if, obviously, if you're a Cancer, you are necessarily instinctual, or a Leo, necessarily intelligently self-aware, or Aquarius, necessarily intuitively aware. I mean, there are many undeveloped Aquarians and highly developed Cancerians or Leos. So, as always, the key is the level of evolution at which the individual stands. With much of this, says the Tibetan, we have already dealt, and there is no need for repetition as we study the polar opposites of the signs already considered. And that's one of the best ways to proceed, you know. And actually, interestingly enough, he will, in this particular chapter, deal with polar opposites. But always study polar opposites to gain a clear contrast between the opposites and the distinctive nature of each of the opposites. So he does this a little later in the book, around page 330 or so. He'll contrast Aries Libra at earlier and later stages, and so it goes with all the other pairs of opposites. I do not intend to refer unduly and in detail to, but he will refer, but not unduly and in detail to points with which you are already familiar, save to bring to your attention the beautiful and synthetic unfolding of the divine plan. When we have an understanding of the beauty which is involved, we are in a position to appreciate relationships, and we come to a deeper understanding of the interaction. Somehow beauty carries the light, and in the search for beauty we discover the truth of these interrelationships. Beauty is truth, truth is beauty. It's a good fourth ray or second ray kind of summation. Okay. So, you know, DK summarizes but tells us he will not unduly elaborate. This sign, as you already know, is, as you already know, one of the two gates of the zodiac. Gates into kingdoms and out of kingdoms, right? Two gates of the zodiac, especially for the human kingdom, because through it souls pass into outer manifestation and to the appropriation of form, and this is under the Cancerian influence. Okay, spell it right. Under the Cancerian influence, yes. So you may not be born in Cancer, but Cancer rules the manifestational process which brings the soul into such a condition that it can possess a physical body. So it rules the whole idea of precipitation into form. Interestingly enough, it also rules that particular creative hierarchy, which is still resident upon the logoic plane, but which is going to lift itself out of form, considering form as the cosmic physical plane, before long. It's on the verge of liberation. Of course, these can be very long cycles we're talking about before that complete liberation may occur. So, two gates of the zodiac, because it's through it. One, if this is one of the two gates of the zodiac, Capricorn is the other, right? Through it, souls pass into outer manifestation. Manifestation exists, of course, on all levels. Manifestation coming forth into form. Spirit is formless per se, and there is always some level of form through which spirit is manifesting. So we could say, we could say that there is such a thing as inner manifestation. DK seems to imply it by the use of the adjective outer. And then to subsequent identification with outer manifestation for many long cycles, in fact, for millions of years. The process of disidentification from outer form is very short when compared with the number of years, long cycles, millions of years, that the consciousness has thought of itself as the form. So it is the gate which stands wide open, broad and easy to pass through, yet it leads unto the place of death and to that long imprisonment which precedes the final revolt. There are, I suppose, many revolts along the way, but they are probably unsuccessful revolts, and we are talking about a kind of revolt that is truly successful and severs the consciousness from identification with the form. Well, what is the final revolt? It could be even the ninth initiation, when the consciousness refuses all association with form, i.e., with the cosmic physical plane, whether that's cosmic etheric form or cosmic physical form, per se. So many can come in and continue to come in rapidly through this gate, cycle after cycle, and at the present time, few pass through the other gate. It is allied with material nature, so rays 3 and 7, which come through Cancer, are rays of materiality, not exclusively so, but they are certainly associated with the activity aspect and with order within the activity aspect. It is allied with material nature and with the mother of forms. Well, there we have the moon, the mother of forms, and Cancer, one of the most ancient signs. What do we mean by an ancient sign? An ancient constellational lord, a lord who has been evolving for a long time, just the way there are human beings who have been evolving for lesser periods of time. We're told the sign Cancer was very prominent in the early part of the previous solar system. So Cancer is allied with the material nature and with the mother of forms, just as the other gate, Capricorn, is allied with spirit, the father of all that is. Of course, interestingly enough, Capricorn is one of the negative signs. Its earth and water signs are considered negative. And it's ruled by Saturn, which is associated with the mother aspect, but the mother is considered to be the intelligence aspect, correlating with the third ray. So there are a number of ambiguities, and allocations of meaning are not cut and dried. We have to have some flexibility of mind to see how Capricorn can be identified with both the father and the mother. But for astrological purposes, Capricorn is generally considered the father, and Cancer, the mother. Okay. In this sign lies hid the whole problem of the law of rebirth. And you know, we are told that the scientific workers will be studying the law of rebirth, and first-rate types will be involved, fifth-rate types, maybe seventh-rate types also, since we're dealing with manifestation, allied to the law of rebirth or cyclic return into matter. So this is the sign particularly in which reincarnation can be studied. It's looking toward the past. Cancer is backward looking often. Perhaps Scorpio will provide us with those hypnotic powers which will help to reveal the past, unveil the past. And Pisces, sensitive Pisces and psychic Pisces, should also be involved in that revelation once the tendency to glamour is overcome. So reincarnation is implicit in the manifested universe and is a basic and fundamental theme underlying systemic pulsation. I mean, even the solar system is a part of the reincarnational process, because the solar logoi, well, that's not working, is it? Reincarnate as the planetary logoi, and all beings, even the tiny little atom, is at once in incarnation and out of incarnation. What is its duration in incarnation? Is it oscillating between manifestation and what we would call non-manifestation at a tremendous rate of speed? This has to be further investigated. So systemic pulsation, we've already had five solar systems. I mean, this is technically speaking the fifth incarnation of our particular solar logos. There will come another, and then perhaps in the summation of the six, in the eternal now, and beyond time and space, we have what we could call the seventh solar system, not necessarily sequential. Depends how we interpret the idea of the appearance of the seventh system. Okay, so reincarnation is implicit in the manifested universe and is a basic and fundamental theme underlying systemic pulsation, planetary pulsation, the pulsation of the human being into incarnation and out, and the pulsation of the lesser units in the lesser kingdoms and even of the elemental lives and so forth. There are certain things which I would like to make clear in connection with reincarnation. He does take the opportunity to discuss these important metaphysical points in relation to the sign through which they are most demonstrated, or in relation to the sign which have the most to do with these particular factors. This sign, Cancer, being concerned primarily with the world of causes, interesting, even though it is related to the world of manifestation, has about its inner meaning much indefiniteness. Well, the outer meaning is very definite, but the inner meaning, as that meaning can be apprehended in relation to the cardinal cross, is rather indefinite. After all, Neptune, the planet of indefiniteness, or the blurred boundary, is strongly associated as the esoteric and hierarchical ruler of Cancer. So he's going to tell us basically that all the signs found on the cardinal cross, the constellations found there, are difficult for man truly to understand because he has not learned to think in large enough holes. So, a meaning of much indefiniteness and an apparently vague subtlety, sounds so Neptunian, doesn't it, which proves most elusive to the ordinary thinker. I'm afraid he would classify us very much as ordinary thinkers, and perhaps initiates as non-ordinary thinkers. So this this means us. All right. But remember, he is emphasizing the idea of the inner meaning of the sign, not the outer meaning, which is most concrete and has to do with that dense physical vehicle which is inherited from the previous solar system. This is also, yeah, he's going to say it. This is also true of all the signs which go to the forming of the cardinal cross in the heavens. This is a cross on which a unit or a collection of units which becomes a still greater unit spends a great deal of time. I mean, man monadically spends a huge amount of time on the cardinal cross, longer even than the many millions of years on the common or mutable cross. On the fixed cross, it's a very slow, very rapid passage, and a small amount of time. And this fits, you know, when you kind of compare the Manu in a way related to the will and the cardinal cross, and the Mahachohan in a way related to the mutable cross and intelligence with the Bodhisattva. Their terms of office are disproportionate. The Bodhisattva has a very small term of office compared to that of the Manu or the Mahachohan. Actually, the Mahachohan probably has the longest. But both the first and third rays and the crosses which represent them have a longer duration by far than the duration of the fixed cross for human experience, or the duration of the fixed cross phase. So in the last analysis, it is only the initiated disciple. We're all disciples, I suppose. Even the Christ is the disciple. So here he's speaking of the initiate, right? Speaking of the initiate. It is only the initiated disciple who can fathom the true meaning of these zodiacal influences, which are cardinal, as they pulsate throughout the manifested universe. Now, you know, our little zodiac is not pulsating throughout, well, it is, but it would hardly be detectable in a galactic sense, I suppose, or in a supergalactic sense. So this manifested universe is more like our local cosmosphere. As they pulsate throughout the manifested universe, because they are primarily the expression of spirit or life more than soul and body. Even though, of course, Capricorn can be very concrete and Cancer is one of the most tangible influences in a lower sense, but not in a higher. And true of Capricorn as well. So DK is giving us the extremes or some hint at the differences which lie at the extremes of the expression of these different signs of the zodiac. Cancer produces the gross physical body, nothing more tangible than that, to the unawakened human consciousness, and yet internally it has to do with spirit or life and with great processes which move wholes and even move the creative hierarchies as aggregations of monads. Therefore, until after the third initiation, that is the line of demarcation in terms of expanded consciousness, until after the third initiation, as you have oft been told, there is little to be said about that mysterious essence which is divinity in motion. Divinity having to do with spirit again, right? Well, I'll put it a different way. Divinity having to do with the essence and with the monad. The word spiritual is sometimes related to the soul level, but divinity, let's put it this way, divinity and spirit are related. But divinity and, well, let me spell it right, and spirituality are contrasted, because spirituality, as DK uses the term, extends to the first, to the soul level, and perhaps to the egoic, higher egoic level, the spiritual triad. But divinity applies to the monad and to the spirit per se. So divinity, the mysterious essence, which is divinity in motion. You hear the old the idea that the spirit is like the wind, it bloweth where it listeth, it bloweth bloweth where it wills to blow, and, well, I'll misquote it, but no man knows from whence it came or whither it goes. The origins and the destiny are in its own counsel, and we do not understand. When you, for instance, read that the keynotes of this sign can be expressed in the biblical phrase, "The Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters," what does it really mean? Does it in reality mean anything specific to you? Well, I think probably not. Probably it means something maybe general, but not specific. What are the waters? Well, are we thinking of the cosmic astral plane, or are we thinking of the entire substance of the cosmic physical plane as being the waters? So maybe not, but you know, the waters mean something larger, I think, than astrality here. They definitely mean substance, that which is elemental substance, which is to be molded under the impress of spirit into purposeful forms. But no, it probably doesn't mean anything really specific to us, because we cannot yet deal with those levels of divinity. We have no concrete experience, no esoteric experience of it. So you might reply by saying that it means God moved in substance and produced by moving the outer tangible forms. I guess that's kind of what I was saying. But does that truly convey to you an intelligible truth? So DK asks us to ponder, you know, which God is it here? I mean, the God probably that we're speaking of here is the Solar Logos, I suspect. The Solar Logos moved in substance and produced the solar system, or any great deity would do that. In Cancer, God breathed into man's nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. So in these words, you have established the relation, which exists in the mind of God between spirit, the breath of life, and soul, consciousness, and man form. However, DK repeats himself, does that statement convey any intelligible concept to your mind? I think not, because the synthesis of the final relation is beyond the average grasp, and its linking, or essential unity, lying as it does outside of consciousness and known reality, takes place first of all in this sign, one of the most ancient of the signs and one of the first to be recognized and established as an influencing factor by ancient humanity, which did not necessarily appropriate a relationship to all the signs of the zodiac at the same time. Well, I think here we will end Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 95. We'll go back just a little bit when we take up the next one. And this is page 313. That's where we are. Well, we'll have to reconsider these unintelligible things. See if we can come any closer, but perhaps not. There is a synthesis here. You know, we're dealing with incarnation in a very large sense. We're dealing with the incarnation of the entire human kingdom, and not just the individual incarnation. Cancer does relate to the incarnation of the entire human kingdom. And we may be dealing with incarnational processes of still greater beings in which the cosmic lord of Cancer is influential. So it's through Cancer, and probably through that hierarchy on the Logoic plane, that it becomes possible for the breath of life to go forth in the cosmic physical plane into a state of deeper incarnation. But these are just generalities, and DK is pointing to areas of understanding which are more appropriate to a master than they are for us. All right, so let us use the great invocation at this point and see if we can close this little section and then go on to number 66. Right now I seem to be on a run where I'm doing one program per number. It has to do with my recording schedule here, but it may be also possible to do otherwise and to have one number with quite a few subsections. Anyway, the great invocation for us now. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, we will go on to number 96 at the appropriate moment. Meanwhile, we have much to ponder on the concluding remarks of Leo and the opening remarks in relation to the sign Cancer.